Welcome to the Dash Arts Podcast, seeing the world through an artistic lens. I'm Josephine Burton, Artistic Director at Dash Arts, and also former singer in Oi Vavoy. Oi Vavoy is a band that shaped me, and whose music has touched so many people. It's actually been over 25 years since me and Jonathan Walton, also known as Lemez Lovash, came together at university in Oxford to create a musical sound that would be inspired by Jewish and Eastern European cultures. The band grew as we moved to London. It fused together klezmer and Roma and liturgical Jewish music and jazz and house and drum and bass and hip hop. It spoke to a large and loyal audience. I still regularly meet people who tell me how much the band inspired them. And it's still going. Last year marked the 20th anniversary of the album Laughter Through Tears. The album won 2 BBC Radio 3 World Music Awards and took the band to festivals and stages all over the world. It was listed in the New York Times top 10 albums of 2003 and launched the career of the singer Katie Tunstall, who was my eventual successor as lead singer in the band. The 20th anniversary, with a celebratory reunion gig at Earth in Hackney, seemed like quite a landmark moment and a great excuse for a podcast to bring the original members of the band back together. We recorded all the interviews last summer when the gig happened, and were on the verge of putting out this podcast when war broke out in Gaza and Israel last October. It no longer felt the right time to release the episode. And then as time went on and the horrors continued to unfold, I felt like I still couldn't. This podcast that you're about to hear is emotional, but ultimately it's joyous. Every one of my old bandmates and I talked about how amazing it was to create a contemporary sound that was proudly and radically Jewish, signed to Outkast, a label that for many of us was putting out the most interesting, cool sounds in the London art scene. And right now, post 7th of October, it's very hard to be proudly and publicly Jewish. It's difficult, sometimes embarrassing, sometimes incredibly awkward and often polarizing to talk about Jewishness in the art scene at the moment. But after a great deal of thought, I've decided that this story shouldn't be silenced. So you're going to hear the podcast as we recorded it last summer. And I'm going to take you back to Oxford in the late 1990s when Oi Vavoy started.
So I have the privilege and the slight challenge of speaking to my great friend, Jonathan, also known as Lemez Lovash, who is a multifaceted artist, but in this context, a trumpeter and a vocalist, formerly with Oi Vavoy. How's that?
That was excellent. I'd like to put you in my pocket and take me with you.
Okay, that's good. So we're making a podcast, which is partly about the celebration of the kind of 20th anniversary of Laughter Through Tears, and partly kind of an opportunity to look back. And what I've realized more and more as I've been talking to you all is how the impact it had on my life in incredibly positive ways, like how it's made me who I am today. And I don't think I would have done that if I hadn't, you know, have started Oi Vavoy and with you. And so I guess I wanted to go back. If we can, I reckon you and I might have slightly different versions of how the band began.
I spent my third year at university between Hungary and Russia and France. And I was studying music in Russia. I was at the Gnesinka Academy, which is like a sort of conservatory, but not for classical music, but for jazz and other forms. At the same time, I was spending quite a lot of time in Hungary, and there I became quite deeply involved with somebody who was a central part of the folk dance and folk song movement. And through that relationship, I got to witness and hear Hungarian folk music. And it was very different to what I'd always thought folk music was in my own experience. It was very much a living tradition It was a vibrant tradition. It was a tradition that was changing, that young people were embracing. And so having heard Hungarian music, and also through her being introduced to music from former Yugoslavia, to Roma Gypsy music, I came back to the UK after the end of this year's study with a desire to play some of this music. And so that was my initial intention, was to play just covers, really, of some of these folk songs, be they Hungarian, Roma Gypsy, Russian, whatever. And then I remember meeting you, Josephine. You only have one name.
Well,
for the purposes of this podcast, we'll stick to your one name. I remember meeting you and talking to you about these travels and these experiences that I'd had and wanting to start a band, and you saying, "I'm in." And then we said, "Oh, okay, that's great." And then at some point, while we were recruiting band members, I think somebody asked me about what kind of music we would play. And I said, "Oh, it's Hungarian and Russian and Gypsy and these things." And someone said to me, "But don't you have any music of your own?" Meaning, okay, so you're Jewish. Don't you have any Jewish music? And that was something that I didn't really know much about. I'd heard this also through this experience with these folk dancers and musicians in Hungary. I'd heard of the klezmatics. I think they might have even given me something to say, "Look, this is this Jewish music called klezmer. It's actually pretty cool." I remember being quite shocked by that, quite happy that it existed. And then first of all, I had that desire. And then secondly, it was meeting like-minded people such as you and such as the other musicians like Steve, Sophie, Leo, and Nick. Meeting all of those people and then finding that they were on a similar kind of journey and wanted to explore this interesting new music that none of us really knew much about, but we're all very hungry to find out more.
So my way into exploring the material that Oy Vuoi eventually created wasn't quite as romantic or as geographically exotic as Jonathan's. But by some weird coincidence, the night before Jonathan and I randomly met on the street, I'd been at a party at a friend's house. And kind of coming through their little stereo, through the fog of like late night atmosphere, I heard this Jewish song being kind of merged in with a dub song late at night. And it was a song that I was totally immediately familiar to me as being this old traditional Jewish Hasidic nigun that went da 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 da. I'm not going to carry on. It was one of these repetitive songs that gets sung, I think probably on Friday nights, and I totally associated it with traditional, parochial, old-fashioned, old-world music, something that was sort of stuck in my great-grandparents' generation. And here was that song kind of merged in with a dub song at a party late at night. So John and I set about forming a band because it couldn't just be he and I. And Jonathan found the violinist Sophie Solomon.
It's kind of amazing to think back to those days when, you know, John was like, "Do you want to start a band?" And we were all like, "Oh, yeah, okay, let's start a band." And I remember so well that first time when he sort of came to me, and because we both studied Russian together, and he came and we'd both been listening to Klezmatics, and he came to me in the library. He was like, "I know we're going to do it. Let's start this band." And it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. I was really excited at the idea of picking my violin up again. I hadn't played my violin for a year because I'd been in Russia, and picking my violin up again and using it as a way to kind of reconnect with my Jewish side. And having been a jungle DJ and being a sort of been interested in electronic music, I kind of really like the idea of taking the tradition but also representing it in a way that felt really contemporary for kind of young people today.
Okay, so I'm Steve. I'm clarinetist and singer.
Hi, I'm Nick Amar. I'm guitarist and backing vocals. It was pretty mind-blowing to me because I'd never really heard that kind of music. John had brought all these kind of interesting traditional music that he'd learnt on his travels. And at the time, I was quite into drum and bass and stuff. And so it got mashed up quite a lot, didn't it, Steve? I think.
Yeah. I was really glad when you joined because it really... I don't know. It just the whole thing went up a gear. The sound of your playing and Josh's as well. It just suddenly became a much better band. And
I was just thinking, actually, it wasn't just the rock that I brought because I'd been in South America. Actually, I was very much influenced by Latin music at the time, Latin American music. So I was kind of bringing a lot of. I started learning flamenco. So that was really cool for me because I felt like I was really expanding my sort of musical knowledge and it was just a really exciting time, wasn't it? It was a really fertile ground.
Mm-hmm.
Everything we were doing sounded so unique. Mm-hmm. I was kind of throwing all these Latin American licks trying to do that, even though I'd just learned it the day before probably. And then Josh and John and John and Steve and Sophie were all kind of mashing up all this kind of amazing East European music, and I don't know quite how, but it sounded really cool.
Yeah, hi, my name's Josh. I play drums in Oi Vuvoi.
I'm Leo, former bassist of Oi Vuvoi.
There was this kind of sense that we'd kind of immediately just found something new. There was a kind of way of playing this that could, it was different because I had no reference point. I wasn't knowledgeable about world music. So I didn't go in and do what a klezmer musician would do because I didn't know what a klezmer musician would do. All I did was what I did. And I reverted back to beats. And I think actually that was it was kind of helpful. I think quite quickly, something that we started pushing the boundaries on, I think, straight away.
I didn't have any background at all in Jewish folk music. I'd never heard any in the first session I did. And so I just started doing, in that first session, I just started playing my usual style, which was, I was really into soul funk back then. So I sort of played a slightly sort of soul-y, funky sort of vibe. And everyone went, wow, that's great. Ha ha, you've made Jewish folk a bit funky, Leo. Ha ha ha. So I was like, oh, okay. It's people are happy with it. I'm interested. Anyway, we didn't go in a particularly funky direction from there. But that was fun. That was fun. And we had sort of pub gigs, didn't we?
And that was our first one, right? Like above the Wheat Sheaf or something.
Wheat Sheaf, that's right, yeah.
I remember that we did our first concert in this pub. I think it was called the Wheat Sheaf. And you were very sociable. You knew a lot of people. I was a hermit and I didn't know anybody. And you were really sociable and you knew everybody. And suddenly we were this band who probably sounded terrible and we probably had about two rehearsals and we put on this gig. And it was absolutely rammed and there were line down the street and people were going crazy. And I remember thinking, what the hell is going on? And I think that was the Josephine magic right there.
And I'd never been in a band with people queuing down the road. I've been in a band where you have to get all your mates to come along and you sort of try and fill it up, but not with a queuing down the road type thing. And I remember, Joe, somebody tried to pull you off the stage. People were getting so excited about our gig at the Wheat Sheaf. They tried to pull you off stage in a sort of...
a stage diving way.
I don't know. It was quite rowdy. It was like everyone was probably drinking a lot and dancing and just sort of like really having a great time.
Amazing! How amazing to play that with you all here again! So cool.
And so you go in this beautiful energetic cycle between performer and audience, and the more happy that the audience get, then the more vigorously the musicians play. And that's what we were interested in at that time. It wasn't really about subtlety and beauty and spirituality. It was about, okay, how can we sing these songs in a way that makes everybody happy and jump up and down as much as possible? And I also remember that I was wearing a hat, like one of those kind of deerstalker hats. And at that time, as a student, I didn't have a proper one. I think I had one that was made of some kind of paper, some kind of card. And I remember that I sweated so much in that gig that it kind of melted. That's what I remember.
So there were a few more gigs after the Wheat Sheaf. I can't remember where they all were, but they were mostly in pubs and they were mostly quite drunken. And then we all left university and ended up largely back in London. I think we lost a few people on the way. So those years just after leaving university and going to London are full of loads of amazing memories, but some of them are quite difficult, which I also wanted to talk about with Jonathan.
The less positive outstanding memories for me about that time is you and I sitting probably in another pub. I think it was a pub in somewhere in South London. And I really remember it because it was like May Day week that week, the day, and there were protests all over London. It was quite a kind of, there was high energy in the street. And you had been deputized to tell me that I was no longer in the band, or there'd been a decision. Do you remember that time?
I do vaguely remember that time. I mean, what happened was that when there were, from those days, from the student days in Oxford, which were very kind of carefree and all about having a good time, somehow what happened was is that when university finished and we all went back, and, you know, most of us were living in London, like a few things happened. Firstly, the guitarist, Jake, who was a big part of the band, his father died. And so he, as an observant Jew, he couldn't play for a year. So at that point, I think there was a question about should we continue or should we stop? And I think what happened was, I think I was unclear and unsure about it. So I went to a fantastic adult education college called Morley College, and I did a 1 year, something called a music access course. And that was my first encounter with musicians who were like, okay, you know, this is not fun. This is serious. We can do this. And that was where I met Josh, and Josh was there as a drummer.
And so he said, do you want to come and have a play? And then he said, actually, we've got a show. We're playing in the foyer down at the South Bank Centre. And so I went down, didn't really know what to expect, just turned up there. And I saw these guys and girls on stage. And I remember seeing Leo and thinking, okay, that guy's holding it down there. That's cool. That's cool. And I was kind of like looking at the clarinet and the violin and everything, just thinking, okay, this is kind of interesting, the way they're weaving around. I felt there was a kind of underlying kind of edge to the sound that I really kind of identified with, and I didn't know exactly what it was. And I had a chat with everyone after. John introduced me to everyone, and someone said, "Ah, yeah, you're that guy we heard. Are you going to come and play some bongos with us?" And I was like, "What?" Kind of felt a little bit put out by that. I was like, "Okay, maybe these are the guys."
I don't remember that.
I'm not going to name names. Anyway, they did a motion like, you're going to come and play bongos with us? And I was like, no, I'm really not.
And I think it was Josh's presence that made us think, okay, we can do this now seriously, because we had somebody who says, listen, this is serious and you can do something with this. I don't think the thought had ever occurred to any of us, the rest of us, before, that it was anything more than fun. That was basically the beginning of a process about thinking what the band should be?
And you've gone on a slightly careful, circuitous route not to avoid my memories of the conversation when you told me that I wasn't going to be in the band anymore.
No, I mean, listen, what I remember from that is I remember that because there was this different energy and this different impetus, it was basically now much more clear about, okay, can we make this as professional as possible? And part of making it as professional as possible was, can we have, like, what do we want to do? And I think one of the, you know, we'd started off doing songs and we wanted to do maybe not songs. We wanted to work instrumentally and we wanted to, you know, the whole klezmer tradition is that there is a kind of a Yiddish singing tradition, but there was so much instrumental music. And I think I felt like that's what we wanted to explore. And it was only much, much later when, you know, the process of getting a singer, we didn't do, you know, the thing that got assigned to Outcast Records was Womex in 2000 and I want to say 2001. The thing that got us signed, so we didn't have a singer. And by that time, the lineup had changed and everyone was like much more professional. We could do a proper industry showcase gig there. So I think we had to go on an evolution. And I think, unfortunately, I do remember that meeting. And I do remember being deputized to tell you. And I do remember it being uncomfortable and being sad. You know, and it hurt me, you know, as your friend, to have to tell you something that hurt you and upset you.
I put you on the spot by asking you that, John, and we've never really properly talked about that time. I have really mixed feelings about it all because I love that band. It's like being a parent and being part of something and then letting it out in the world. And obviously I stayed so connected to the band way beyond that time. So you handled it pretty well in that way. Like, you know, I didn't walk away and say, I'm not seeing, you know, like we managed actually to sustain a friendship and not just a friendship, like a working relationship for years beyond that. So to your credit, you handled it really well. And I was sort of committed to the band enough to cope and move on with it. But it's really funny. Like I probably anticipated, you know, that, you know, you're in a relationship with somebody and you have these, there are signs before the thing happens. Right. So I'm sure I was anticipating it for a few months before it, because I was definitely, and I still have it now, even in fact, as we're talking, I can feel it. As I was beginning to feel more and more anxious, I think, about my singing and about being in that, you know, but now I'm finding it hard to talk to you. But you, there was something about the anxiety that was connected to obviously feeling something in the room was affecting my voice and my breath, like my diaphragm slightly constricted. And still sometimes when I can sort of feel as I'm about to sing, I can feel this sort of pressure on my chest, which is mental, like it's a mental thing of anxiety. That definitely was emerging in those few months before that conversation, and that it was affecting my voice through just the, you know, through as a result of feeling anxious, feeling uncertain, whatever it was, the energy in the room, I obviously was picking up on it. It took me ages to sing again. I mean, now I'm comfortable singing again, but for years afterwards, I would feel this sort of pressure on my chest from, you know, I guess a sort of lack of confidence in my own voice because of that time. So it, although we moved forward and we did a, you know, like I love the band and I was so proud to see it signed. And so, you know, one of my claims to fame is always that, you know, Katie Tunstall replaced me in the band is often what I said, which is, yeah, rubbish, right? Given that there was quite a significant hiatus between the two of us. But, you know, I've been so proud and happy to see it succeed. But there's still a little like part of me physically which was affected by that experience.
I mean, I think it really says something, you know, about you, that after kind of being told, hey, you know, we don't want you anymore. So after a rejection, that you were able to stand by and really support us as we continued on our journey. I think it says a lot about your character, I have to say. Maybe also you didn't want to show that it hurt so much. Maybe there was a part of hiding in there. I don't know. Maybe. Are we going off topic? Are we going off topic
no.
now?
Are you, now, I'm, now you're turning into my therapist, John. What does it mean?
You know what? We should do a musician's therapist podcast. That would be so fantastic. You can imagine all musicians must have these stories.
Oi Vavoi is a band that has lived for a quarter of a century with immense histories and occasional difficult stories. Many, as you've heard, those stories we haven't actually ever really talked about until now. But it wasn't just me that left the band. Violinist Sophie Solomon also left to pursue her own musical career, as did Katie Tunstall, who was catapulted to stellar solo stardom.
When there's a memory that just sticks in your head, have you had that before? And you think, we've been a band together for a long, long time, and there's one memory that comes back to me. We'd just come off our first European tour. We'd been on the bus for 3 weeks, living on a bus for 3 weeks all together. We didn't know whether we were in Milan, Rome, Athens. It was all a bit of a blur. And we went on stage. It was actually in Brussels. We went on the stage in Brussels, and the drone began just like this. And it was the beginning to our most popular song, Refugee. But the drone just kept going on. And the drone went on, and it went on, and it went on. And there was no singer. We all looked at each other. Where's the singer gone? Who's going to sing it now? No one had prepared the lyrics. No one's voice was high enough. We panicked. And we looked at each other. Katie had been stuck in the lift. Katie was stuck in the lift and she couldn't get out. What were we going to do? Keep on playing the drone. So we kept playing the drone. We kept playing the drone. And then all of a sudden, and we were so grateful to see her. We really were very grateful. Katie came on stage.
Hello, Overboy family. How are you? This lot's sounding absolutely incredible. So nice to be back. You ask me.
Also around that time, Jonathan moved on from
the band. Yeah, well, I mean, what happened to me is that I had lymphoma. I had this Hodgkin's lymphoma, this type of cancer that was located in my neck. And I had that in 2005 for the first time. I remember being in hospital when those London attacks happened. I was having my biopsy in central London when there were those bombings. Mm. It must have been in, what was that, 7/7 in 2005. So that was very surreal that I was in hospital having this biopsy, which would then go on to like radically change my life. At the same time that this bombing was going on in the city that would like change everybody's. That was very curious. I even woke up from the anesthetic and heard the news.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. And so when that happens to you, and then you have to go into a process of, you know, treatment of radiotherapy, of chemotherapy, whatever. You always have to try and find reasons why. You need to try and find logical explanations. Unfortunately, because that's the way we've been trained, our rather insufficient educational system doesn't really prepare us for important questions. And it puts us down a meaningless path of logical, rational explanation, where, of course, there is none. But nonetheless, there's definitely a case to be said that this idea that an inability to express something, cognitive dissonance, when you're blocking your emotions, that has an effect on your body. Mm. And so what was happening, so this cancer, I was sure that there was a reason for it. And the reason that I came up with in my mind at the time wasn't true. I thought it was because of the excessive demand of touring, of performing, of taking, you know, red eye flights, et cetera, et cetera. I thought that was the reason for it. I've subsequently realized it's not that. It's to do with communication and in other things. But yeah, that was the catalyst which started the process of me moving away from the band. And I finally left in 2008.
Let's do another one. This is the one when the band sat me down and said, Katie, we'd like to do a song in Sephardic Jewish Spanish. I was like, I don't speak that. And they said, don't worry, just make the noises.
Yo me enamoré de un aire, de un aire, de una mujer.
Fast forward 20 years from the epochal launch of Laughter Through Tears, Josh and Steve decided to reunite the original members of the band who'd played on that album for a sort of celebratory anniversary gig at Earth in Hackney. It was so incredibly emotional for me to sort of sit there amid like well over 700 people enjoying the music and seeing potentially some faces I recognise from like gigs of old, but also just to see how many people like knew all the lyrics.
Yeah, seeing that audience just seeming to express so much happiness and love for the album that we've made as we were playing it. That yeah, and it did, it was a shared experience. It really felt like a shared experience with the audience. And yeah, and playing with the guys again. You know, that was super, super special. And finding out that I could do it again, that was lovely. Like, okay, you know, I didn't muck it up. That was nice. And then afterwards, like people coming up and going, you know, oh, I flew in from Dublin, I flew in from Amsterdam. Thank you, this song helped me get out of a abusive relationship. It's so amazing to hear it being played. I can't really put that into words what that kind of moment means.
And looked around, it's lovely. It's really, really looked experience. Around 700 people who were totally there with us because they understood why it was important, and it was celebrating an album that was important. We're fortunate enough to have made an album that was important to other people as well, so it was important to all those people. It was important to us, and we all just kind of shared it together.
I thought it was funny, Steve, when you were saying, I wasn't sure if Leo could still play bass or if Nick could still play guitar. And then from the audience, someone shouted, yes, he can!
Yeah.
And I didn't know who it was at the time, but afterwards, my wife and children were there. I found out that it was,
it was quite therapeutic.
Yeah.
Because there was some baggage. There was some water under the bridge. I don't know how to explain it, but there had been some fallings out and had been some upset, and somehow we managed to put it to one side and to come back in our 40s and kind of do it all again. It was a great feeling. It was a really, really great feeling. And I'm really, really glad we did it. I think had we not done it, might be one of those things that we could have almost always done and never did. You know, I don't know. It kind of closed a circle on some unfinished business.
I, like you, I had residual feelings of difficulty kind of based on having left the band. And having left the band, I think Oi Vavoy, as a band that Katie Tunstall had already left, Sophie had got a solo deal, songwriter and trumpet player got cancer. So there was this narrative of bad stuff happening to the band. And understandably, they wanted to minimize that in the future going forward because they wanted to continue. Because yes, the band really did have a place. There were, it was very, very hard for the band to turn it around. I mean, that's one of the beautiful things about what's happened in the last months and kind of being a part of the band again is I have huge respect for how Josh and Steve, and to a large extent, Nick as well, turned it around. So how they kept it going, how they turned it around, how they continued to write fantastic songs. Like that was not something that maybe my ego had allowed me to admit before, that they can write beautiful songs without me. So that, that hurt me, if I'm honest. And so the fact that I could open myself to that and learn these new songs, which I had nothing to do with, and say, these are great songs. That was, I think, a really important part of the process for me. And I think the fact that I could approach it with that, with that attitude, it wasn't easy. It really wasn't easy. But the fact that I'm proud that I managed to get there, and I'm proud that through that openness and through trying to put that ego aside, I feel like it brought me much closer to them again and kind of closed that chapter of me leaving, which was tainted with negativity because of the nature in how I left.
It's been really wonderful reconnecting with everyone as well, particularly Josh and Steve, who, you know, kept the band going. It's been wonderful sort of reconnecting with that, and remembering that I did it.
Being in a band like Oi Vavoy, where everybody is kind of a creator and where you're collaborating on the creative process so completely is like being in a family. And it's very funny to reunite and find that everyone's family roles are still sort of functional. And it was just extremely entertaining sort of experiencing, you know, the fact that we are all 20 years older, but we're also all very much the same and mature, more mature and more kind of like we've all been through so much and lived so much and there's so many children now and, you know, all of that. But at the same time, at the heart, you know, it's still the six of us. And that's funny and very charming. And there's a familiarity there that, you know, we've lived through so much and played so much together and done so much together and created such a wonderful sort of creative movement together that, you know, you can't take that away.
This was my way of discovering more about my Jewish culture and my roots from a non-religious perspective. So the journey of discovery then became my kind of my labor of love and my passion and my the thing that I love to drive forward. And I think I've always loved the challenge. I've always kind of taken the music industry is hard for anyone. It's hard for everyone, no matter what you've got going on. It's you've always got to try. You're always going to have to reinvent yourself, no matter who you are. Only the very, 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 very top people. But even they have to reinvent themselves. I mean, even Madonna's reinvented herself about six times. I mean, everyone has to reinvent themselves. And so the challenge has always been for me is just to try and keep it going, but with some credibility.
I don't think I'd be doing music now if it wasn't for Oi Vavoy. I probably would have settled on doing something in science or maybe even art. I don't know. But I didn't think it. Yeah, I mean, just having that realization that we were actually a science or label, and just feeling that validation that you shouldn't need, but it, you know, it's, yeah. I mean, we had enough people, sort of enough followers and fans that it kind of gave that confidence. And then I suppose I probably wouldn't have gone into doing music myself solo if it hadn't been for Oi Vavoy. And I I certainly wouldn't be here in the studio with all my, you know, guitars around. Yeah, I probably would have gone into a quote unquote normal job.
Yeah.
Sounds familiar. What about you, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, some way similar to Nick. I mean, it gave me the confidence that I was actually doing something that, you know, people wanted to hear it and hear it live, and the kind of the idea of being a professional musician was not something that I'd really thought was possible. I often wanted to play music, but to actually be going to get gigs and play and tour and all of that, and to be signed to a record company was just something, you know, I was kind of wanted to do, but I was never quite sure how to make that a reality, how to make it possible. And that's where that was where you came in, Joe, in many ways, a kind of an energy and a kind of a way of not just being another group of musicians, that drive from you and from other members of the band led it to be what it was. And I'd not really met people growing up with that kind of self-belief and drive to make it happen.
Amazing! How amazing to play that with you all here again! So cool. So I just want to share a quick story of what happened after I joined this band on tour. So the record company that had signed Oi Vavoi wanted to sign me, and they were an underground Asian dance label. And they had Nitin Soni. And I was like, why do you want to sign me? I'm a busker from Scotland. And they said, well, listen, if you're not sure, why don't you come on tour with one of the bands we already have, and you can write some songs for them, because they need a singer for a few songs. Go on tour, you can get to know us. And I said, great, who are they? And they said, well, they're a Jewish hip-hop band. It's like, who are you people? And then we went on tour and had this most amazing time. It was just magical, wasn't it? It's brilliant. And in one of the rehearsals for that tour, big up for Moshik, the sound guy. Please, you wouldn't hear anything if it wasn't for Mosh. But Mosh was there back in those days. And at the end of one rehearsal, I'm talking to Mosh and I was saying, God, I'm so bored of like being Phoebe from Friends playing Smelly Cat at open mic nights. It's so boring. I need to get some rhythm, which is partly why I love Oi Vavoi, because the rhythm of these human beings is just incredible, as you know. But so Mosh says, well, I've got this little pedal thing in my backpack, and it was my loop pedal. And so the first time I ever tried a loop pedal was because of Moshik, and he had it in his backpack, and it was an Oi Vavoi rehearsal. So basically, this band changed my life. So I love you all.
I think that intention to go on this journey and find beauty there and blow cobwebs off old books and old memories, I think that intention is what led to the band being loved in so many different places, and by so many different people in so many different countries. That intention, I think, was the thing that transcended all of these borders and these boundaries. And of course, I'm very grateful to have been able to go on that journey. I feel like it still continues. This is a constant journey. And I'm very grateful from coming back to the band. It really did close a circle for me. And it started now again in my own creative life and my own creative work. It brought a kind of an incredible impulse of energy and positivity and creativity, which I'm still feeling, and it's still having a great impact. It's reignited something in me, that concert and that process of getting back together with those musicians and feeling their energy, being a part of that again.
Yeah, that's amazing. You're writing songs again.
Yes, I am. I am. I'm loving it.
That's so good. I mean, I definitely think it's funny when you start looking in hindsight, and of course you can rewrite the story every way you want. But being part of that band and then probably not being part of the band made me who I am. You know, I wouldn't be working in the arts. I wouldn't be theatre director. I wouldn't be making shows. I don't know what I'd be doing, but I, you know, like, in a way, the journey has made me who I am, definitely. So I kind of owe everything to the band in a way.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I also owe everything to the band and yeah. There's so much to say. But not in 1.5 minutes.
It's lovely to talk to you, John, as always.
Thank you. Thank you. You too. It's been a pleasure. And I'm happy to have the chance to say, to put into words some of the things which I'm sure have been there and probably wanted to be expressed and didn't find a medium. So thank you for that.
No, thank you for that too.
Yeah, that was quite an emotional conversation with Jonathan. I really loved that. Loved the opportunity to reflect on, like, I guess our many, many years of friendship, as well as the projects we've made together. And I'm really thrilled that we're carrying on working together, and Jonathan is going to be writing some songs for our forthcoming Public House production. So you will be, I no doubt, hearing more from him on the podcast. Huge thanks to Jonathan and to Sophie and to Josh and to Steve and to Leo and to Nick for their time and then bringing their beautiful music to so many people. And thank you also to Marie for producing the podcast. And thank you to you all for listening. And if you like the Dash Arts podcast, please follow us and rate and review us and share us with all your friends. Your support means the world to us.
Thank you.